Dave Poulin. As always, a presentation of the Myers Automotive Group. How are you doing this morning, Dave?
Very well, gentlemen. I'm as immersed in things as you are, and certainly we can go overseas. We can go wherever you want to go. Start things and say,
all right, let's go backwards time-wise, and we'll start with the latest thing and work ourselves back to the worlds. But we'll start with the late night Battle of Alberta, which ends with the Edmonton Oilers beating the Calgary Flames in overtime and winning the series in five games. As you look at it, the series overall, Dave, why are the Oilers moving on and why are the Flames finished?
The Oilers were able to play their game, and Calgary didn't get to theirs as much as anything. And the Oilers bigs were tremendous. They got the chip-ins when they needed to from the balance of their team. And that's a team that's changed quite a bit. And if you look at what Ken Holland has been able to do there, it's a combination of he kept a couple of key pieces in Mike Smith and Ryan Nugent-Hopkins. He made some free agent acquisitions that have been terrific, and Cody Ceci, one of them guys, he's played really well, but Zach Hyman, the primary one, the trades, Duncan Keith, and you know, was the primary one there, and even elevating a couple of his own guys in Evan Bouchard and Ryan McLeod to significant roles, and then the final two pieces, Evander Kane, who everyone shied away from for a lot of good reasons, and then Brett Kulak was a nice pickup at the trade deadline, so I give the management group a lot of credit and then the obvious willingness to make the coaching change when they did. But still, it comes down to, and maybe fitting that on the winning goal, the two superstars involved, and they've got that nice little short passing game. They've got a good short game, you would say, because, you know, to use the golf analogy, McDavid is right in a place where he's been three or four times just inside off the boards where he takes that little chip pass from Draisaitl, and Draisaitl, I am not quite sure how quietly you have 17 points in the series, but with all the focus on McDavid, Draisaitl was just spectacular.
Pooley, what's been the biggest change from Tippett to Woodcroft?
That's a great question. I think maybe getting guys to do what they do best. Anytime I see a coaching change, particularly when an assistant comes up, the assistant has the unique ability to have watched the same group of guys through a different chair and sometimes sees a little bit different, you know, and he's because Tippett had a willingness to put the two bigs together when they did. But it's a great question, Simmer. I'd love to pose it to the guys in that room and, you know, hopefully moving on here, we'll get a chance to be in the rink live and pose that exact question because it does feel different and it seems different.
When Zach Hyman was signed by Edmonton, we were having this discussion last hour. You know, it's a long-term deal for significant dollars, and we don't have to, you know, litigate whether the Leafs made the right decision or not. But this is from an Edmonton point of view. Did they really have to make some big moves, several big moves? Because if it wasn't going to get done, maybe this year and maybe as far into next year, there's a real threat that McDavid and Draisaitl or maybe both would want to move on, and so, you know, they really had to put the push on. Whether it'll pay off down the road, you know, longer term, whether it comes back to cost them. But for the here and now, they had to do something. Is that fair?
I believe it's very fair. But they did a couple of different things. Like, I was one that didn't agree with keeping Ryan Nugent-Hopkins. And it wasn't about Ryan Nugent-Hopkins. It was about change. And it was about affecting change and using the, you know, $6 million or whatever it was. And, yes, he signed a hometown discount, but a long-term deal. Just making change. And if you said, well, you know, he's really tight with Connor McDavid, I would say, well, that would be even more reason to change it because you'd have to make things sometimes a little uncomfortable in that locker room. It can't be we get to keep who we want to keep because we're good friends. And you know, so I that would have been something that I would have really, really tried to dig deep on and see if the money could be utilized somewhere else. And I understand the bringing Zach Hyman in because I got to watch him so much here in Toronto, and he's a really good player now. Like, he's even better than you think or that you imagine. 27 goals is one thing, but he's got better speed. He's so confident. He's so strong down low, and it not coincidentally last night, guys. It's 2-0 Calgary when they flip him to that line, flip Kane off, and flip him to that line, And, you know, quite frankly, Kane disappears in the game at that point, not playing with 97 and 29. And all of a sudden, they're getting a down low, you know, play and more traction on the forecheck. And Hyman is popping pucks out, and the game changes. He gets a goal and two assists, but the game changes when he goes to that line. Just, I think, an excellent line. So maybe he did change the makeup of the team, not in the way I thought of with moving Ryan Nugent Hopkins out, but bringing Zach Hyman in and the strong voice that he has been.
And it's funny how we all change, and I'll still say, Pooley, I'm really not a fan of most of the moves they made. At the end of the day, is it a little bit of luck? And quite simply, if they don't have Evander Kane and his 12 goals, they're not on to round three.
It's amazing. It is good fortune, Simmer, but, you know, it's made by a veteran, savvy guy who's won before. So you look at it and say, okay, well, that's the part you can't argue with. I mean, Ken Holland has done it before and done it with a different organization, because each move on its own doesn't look like, even Duncan Keith, I like bringing a veteran player in who's only played for one team, and because I think there's a freshness to it, even at his age, to playing with a different team. Now, it took him some time. You know, pairing him with CeCe, all of a sudden you have a good pairing, and you're like, wow, in the playoffs, they've been really, really good. And the things that haven't worked out great, you know, even Tyson Barrie, he's nowhere near the player he was at the top of his game, but he's getting it done. And there are times Nevin Bouchard looks like he's lost out there, and then he'll score a couple of big goals. So, yeah, each move as a singular move. I was at Evander Kane's first game in Montreal. We had an off night, and I was at his first game in Montreal, and I was like, oh, boy, how is this going to work, him playing with McDavid? And if he doesn't get to play with McDavid, how's that going to work? And so a lot of one-off moves you would say didn't work, but altogether they did work. And even the goaltending, you know, what he was able to squeeze out of Mike Smith in that series and so far in the playoffs, maybe a surprise to everyone.
Hey, luck is a huge part of hockey. I've always maintained that, you know, it's, and there's no way you can forecast it. It just happens or it doesn't. Serendipity. A couple of things. So Edmonton is one of six teams now left. Of the six teams, in terms of chance to win the Stanley Cup, where would you rank them among the six?
It hasn't changed for me in who is number one, and that's Tampa Bay. And you know, I mean, I think you'd have to say that the team that I picked to go from the West was Calgary, so Edmonton just took them out. You know, I think Colorado and St. Louis could go seven, so they're going to beat each other up again. Edmonton might get through this, so they might be two right now behind Tampa.
Really? Okay. A moment of controversy in the game with the waved-off goal by Blake Coleman late in the third period, which would have given the Flames the lead. And what were your thoughts on the call?
I thought it was a good goal, and I hope in that room with a number of voices that there were some really loud screaming voices for that goal. You know, I hope it wasn't a dominant voice that said, it's no goal, guys. It's a distinct kicking motion. Everybody said, okay, it's a distinct kicking motion. The word distinct was nowhere on that television last night for me at all. You got a guy flying through the air who, yeah, twists his skate maybe, but is actually trying to stop. He's got a 210-pound guy on his left shoulder. He's, you know, crossing paths with a goaltender trying to avoid him. One of his feet is dragged into that. The distinct kicking motion, he did not bring his skate back and then forward and kick the puck into the net. And that's the part. Change the language. Change the language then, because that's not a distinct kicking motion. Maybe propelling the puck in the net, but those words I saw nowhere last night. And I was really surprised when they brought it back. And, you know, I get it. I understand, you know, what the rule is, but the way I interpret it and the way I read it, that doesn't fit.
How much do you worry about Markstrom and 25 goals in five games? Or was this to say, you know, great Edmonton team and a little bit of a meltdown? Or did you, you know, he was brought in to kind of stay away from this come playoff time?
He really was, and he did it so well during the regular season. You know, he took a year to get comfortable, basically, and Daryl Sutter's system fits so well for him. I think he's going to be fine. I do long term. It seems to be a stigma with just Edmonton, not just in the playoffs, but just Edmonton. And goalies tend to get over things like that. So I think he's going to be fine.
Boy, it's going to be an interesting offseason in Calgary. Johnny Gaudreau is a UFA, so he completely holds the cards on what's going to happen there. And then Matthew Tkachuk, and I think I asked you about Matthew Tkachuk as late as Wednesday in his, you know, not that great playoff, to be honest with you. And he's an RFA. And then Andrew Mangiapane needs a new contract. Like, Brad Treliving is going to have a very interesting and busy offseason. For you, when they reconvene in September, do you think both of Gaudreau and Tkachuk will be back with the Flames?
I don't. I think Tkachuk will for sure. I don't think Johnny Gaudreau will. And you know, another name that no one's even mentioned there is Sean Monahan, right. You know, who still has a year left. And so he factors in somewhere. He's still got a year left, but I think there's 11 RFAs and UFAs on that team. The two big defensemen are Zadorov and Gudbranson. Oliver Shillington's an RFA. So tons of work to be done for Brad Treliving, but it's been 8 years for Johnny Gaudreau. Now, he led the team in scoring 6 of those 8 years and finished second twice. Individually, he's been great, guys. He's been terrific. They haven't been past the second round of the playoffs in those 8 years. And they, you know, it's about, they made the playoffs 5 of the 8 years, but they haven't been by the second round. And it's about winning. And Brad Treliving was willing to change the makeup a few years back when he made the big trade with Carolina and brought in Lindholm and Hanifin and moved Dougie Hamilton out and moved the right Statham Fox out. And there were some other things involved in that. So there's been really 2 iterations of the team for Johnny Gaudreau, and the newer one, including Markstrom as well. And this, it just hasn't worked. It hasn't worked to win. So I think at 28 years old, with the money he's going to command and the players that you just named that have to be brought back as both RFAs and UFAs, that it wouldn't be surprised at all for me to see Johnny Gaudreau move on.
How do you keep forward progress, Poole, if he walks out? I mean, to me, that's a major step back to the point of I would question whether they'd be a playoff team next year.
I think he utilized the money somewhere else. I mean, you're...
I guess that's a trick for a place like Calgary, and Edmonton's worse so, but like who?
Well, I don't know, Simmer, and I don't know whether it might not be in a trade as well, but, you know, you got one of the more attractive trades of Blake Coleman to go there last year, and you convinced him it was a good environment for him to go and to be in a winning situation. And that's a kid from Texas, and, you know, who played in Tampa, and, you know, so you convince him to go. So there's somebody doing a good sales job up there, but you might say if it's a chance to play with, if I were a free agent, I had a chance to play with Lindholm and Tkachuk, that'd be a pretty good selling point right there.
Is there a school of thought, and you've made it clear on Gaudreau, but is there a school of thought for Treliving in that he looks at this was a really good team this year that I think overachieved, maybe certainly exceeded expectations from what a lot of people had. Okay, you'd need to sign Gaudreau, no doubt about that, for this scenario to work, but that you roll back with as much of what you have this year as you can. You let Tkachuk go into his into his final year. You bring him back, and you roll back with the same crew because you had a really good team this year to the point where Dave Poulin thought they could win the Stanley Cup this year. And you go back and you roll back with as much as you can next year.
Well, Tkachuk doesn't have a year left, though. He's an RFA, so you'd have to get a deal done there.
Well, you could qualify him, and he's back for a year. So
yeah, you've got Mangiapane in the mix. Yep. You've got Shillington as well. So, I don't know whether I thought it was a team for this year because of the perfect curve that I thought the coach and the team were at, JR. And I don't know that continues. I thought it was a team that was built for this year to go to the Cup, and I don't think rolling the same rendition back next year is as effective.
Are more and more people, Pooley, I'm looking at this, and I know it's just 32 versus 31, but is the realization, though, in both in free agency and trading out even Tkachuk for a younger guy, that the margins are just getting tighter and tighter to, hey, sure, you want to win in the playoffs, but, man, I just want to get there now.
Well, you know, a lot of my career I played with 21 teams in the league, and you knew 16 were going to make the playoffs. And think of that ratio and think of the pressures to get there and start looking around at who's coming. And you know, I think of who's coming in the East, and I think of who's going to be better in the East next year and how hard it's going to be. And, you know, and I don't even, you know, I probably don't have as good a handle on the futures of the West and what's coming, you know, in terms of who's elevating as I do in the East, just because I see so much more of the East and I'm so much more familiar with it. but it is really tough. It's tough, and you're watching right now, and you're watching even in terms of the young superstars, and you say, well, Matthews and Marner, young superstars, haven't got by the first round. And, you know, we talked about Calgary not getting by the second round. This is the first time the superstars of McDavid and Draisaitl have got past the second round. MacKinnon and Makar haven't done it. Eichel hasn't even played a playoff game. And, you know, you got all these young stars, and part of championship pedigree is to win. And yet you've got teams that can't, you know, to your point, even make the playoffs right now. And so it is that much more competitive. It's that much harder to do. And when you have a window like I believe Calgary did this year and you're not able to get it done, I think it probably forces change.
Which of Carolina or the New York Rangers is more capable of winning one game on the road?
I think Carolina is. I do. And there's absolutely no rhyme or reason, and I'm not a betting man, so I'm not betting on it. There you go, JR. But I'll tell you what, it's playing in Madison Square Garden, and Simmer knows that building well. I'm not sure there's a noisier building for no reason. Just because New Yorkers think they can make more noise.
And they don't know
else.
What's going on.
They have no idea.
No, they don't.
Know they're making noise. And it used to be so frustrating to me because, you know, we played them in the playoffs and we beat them in the playoffs. And then halfway through the third period, they'd be gone to the Yankees game. And I go, like, I don't even get to enjoy beating you because you leave.
Yeah. And, Pooley, I guess big picture, and Mika Zibanejad has evolved so much. But I go back to the Pittsburgh series, pretty neutralized. All of a sudden, Sid gets hurt. The matchups on the road just almost put him into a spot where, you know, he's rendered kind of useless. Now, we can say that Taves did that to McDavid a few years ago, but does that worry a big picture? Because to me, that's a sway in the team, you know, versus the whole road, you know, versus winning at home.
It really is. And maybe that's, we're not giving enough credit to that line in Carolina with Stahl and, you know, how effective they've been. And, you know, as much as we say it's the Rangers who aren't playing well on the road, Carolina's that much better at home, but let's give them a little grief for not playing well on the road. And, you know, they've had their opportunities as well. And they're playing with their number two goalie. Their number one goalie is still not in the picture. I understand Freddie Anderson's traveling now, but even to, you know, they've got the goaltending and Andy Ranta to be able to get it done. So, but I do think Carolina finds a way to get it done.
Yeah. General managers, for the most part, are seen and not heard, especially throughout the playoffs. Going into Game 6 tonight, with everything that happened in Game 5 for Colorado and them not being able to close the deal, I asked Mike Johnson this question, so I'll ask you as well. I mean, a man of Joe Sakic's pedigree and playoff pedigree and success he had, is there a school of thought that Joe Sakic goes down and you know, I'm not talking about before the game, fire the boys up, but maybe at a game day skate today where Joe Sakic, because a lot of this has to be between the ears for Colorado in terms of getting through the second round. Is there a place for Sakic to speak, or do you think no?
Yes, there is, but it's your second way of doing it. It's Clarkie was the master of this in Philly. It was the morning skate, but early, out of the way, in the stick room, you know, coffee in one hand, foot up. Just maybe an obscure corner of the rink, nothing to the group, nothing flashy, and a couple of key people. And Nathan MacKinnon absolutely being front and center and the guy I would talk to. And, you know, we talk about how hard it is to get it done, and he thinks he not only has done it, but has done it in spectacular fashion the other night with that hat-trick goal. And, guys, if that goal is not a hat-trick goal, I think Colorado wins the game. Because I think the delay with the hats on the ice is the reason that St. Louis was able to regroup, was able to collect their thoughts. And so, you know, it's a strange twist when you get a hat trick and it arguably hurts you moving forward into the third round of the playoffs for the first time. But I think it seems to me, I don't know Joe well, but it seems to me if there were a style involved, it would be with a coffee, quietly, you know, Clarkie used to do it like he loved the stick room, you know, like because it was kind of a tucked away place in the corner and there was traffic around and guys at different areas where they worked on their sticks. And, you know, he loved the one-on-one quietly there when he'd, you know, grab me and say, look, you're not moving your feet, you know, just, or, you know, so-and-so is doing this to you on face-offs. And, and he would contribute that. Now, I knew him well, and he would do that with me, but I could see Sakic being much more that style than anything overt.
Yeah, and I referenced Pooley, unfortunately, for David Poile back in the day. He'd get on the charter, and he was nervous and coming apart, and that kind of fed to the coaches and everybody else. It's not a point, like, there's no fault in Colorado right now. It's more like, okay, this is the time you just come by, and it's just like, hey, I can't fake it, but I'm pumping tires, right? I'm making everybody feel good. That group's going to be incredibly tight going into tonight.
Yeah, and they've got every reason not to be. I mean, they've got such a good group, and they've been through some battles together. They've added nice pieces. I think they're well-rounded. But did their goaltender give you just a little reason to wonder, Simmer, whether he's got the goods to move on or not, and just maybe a little seed is planted?
Yeah.
Because it was crazy. You couldn't believe that St. Louis was going to not only tie it up, but then win it in overtime. And then when you're watching, like, St. Louis is going to tie this up. This isn't over. And, you know, if I'm thinking that sitting at home, the St. Louis Blues are thinking it. And I've always thought they were going to be a dangerous team because of what they've been through. Mm.
One more for you, just on the Worlds. With a 3-0 lead, toughest lead in hockey, as Colorado found out, so did the Swedes yesterday. What does that say for Canada to be able to come back, on a not quite international size, but you know how the European-based teams can just shut down the game once they get a lead. For Canada to be able to come back from 3-0 down in the third period, 3-1 down with 2 minutes to go, and eventually win the game in overtime.
Yeah, just terrific. And a credit to the group over there. And, you know, the learning experience, I love it from a Drake Batherson standpoint, being on the ice, being the guy, being the focal point and coming through. And it's been a couple of years in a row now where Senators have benefited from it. Last year with Nick Paul and Connor Brown and even Nick Holden being over there and being a big part of it, guys. I think it all, from an individual standpoint, yes, you're wearing the pride, but you're over there, and you're playing after a disappointing finish to your own year, and you find a way to get it done. So kudos to them, and let's keep them going.
Yeah, we'll see. This weekend, semifinals go tomorrow versus the Czechs. Dave, always appreciate the time and the insight. Enjoy the weekend, and look forward to chatting with you again on Monday.
Thanks, guys. Have a great weekend. Enjoy the hockey.